radio.org.au.
Leaders and Luddites, bringing the church into the digital age. A talk by David Mullen from the Archdiocese of Wellington. This talk was recorded at Catholic Digital Media Conference 2014 in Sydney.
Thanks, Gavin. Can you all hear me? I can say that I am a Kiwi, but my mother's Australian, and so I'm half Australian, and her maiden name was Pretty, so that makes me half Australian and half pretty. Take your choice, which one. So the title that I was given, which I think is slightly provocative, Thanksgiving, as always, was bringing Luddites and Leaders, bringing the church into the digital age. In effect, we're in the digital age. The horse is bolted, we're already there, so I've changed the title. Luddites and Leaders, being church in the digital age. And there's just a subtle difference to that. So I wanted to start talking about who are Luddites. So here are some people that I think may be. Julian Assange, WikiLeaks on the World Wide Web. Edward Snowden, worldwide whistleblower. The Occupy movement, they had sleepovers worldwide. Are they leaders? Are they Luddites? Or are they simply lawbreakers? Maybe they're all three. That is Ludd. He was the original Luddite, but he probably didn't actually exist. But the people who followed Ludd were not that bad at using technology. In fact, in the early 1810s, they were experts in the technological advances of the textile industry. What happened was they lost their jobs because the machines started taking over their jobs. So what they did was they attacked machinery, literally, because they believed the machines were replacing human beings. So if that's a Luddite, someone who believes that machines are replacing human beings, who are the Luddites of today? The thing is, not whether or not we think these people are right or wrong. We don't hold them up as heroes or otherwise. We're simply saying, or I'm simply saying, that these people are the Luddites of today. And what the Luddites challenge us to do is they remind us that technology provides opportunity, but only if we continually question the way it shapes our lives and impacts people, as we've already heard this morning, this afternoon. No, I'm not talking about Twitter. I literally want you to follow me. My guess is that the impact of the digital age on people and their relationships and the way they live their lives makes bishops and other church leaders quite nervous. And so it should in some ways. They also know that it can be a source of good. This nervousness of the bishops and church leaders slows things down a bit. It probably frustrates many of us. Digital media can be a positive thing, shaping the lives of many. So how do we know that digital technology is shaping our lives? There are some warning signs. In New Zealand, we have some others. The explosion of digital media has caused a seismic shift in the way we communicate. When did it start? Well, it's hard to say. But in 1993, the first usable web browser called Mosaic was released. It was followed on by Netscape. And I think about that time, it started to become not just a geek's hobby, but it became accessible to the general public, apparently even to dogs. It says, on the internet, no one knows you're a dog. That's a cartoon from 1993. Today, we have more issues. Online media services like Google and Facebook, and even to a lesser extent some of your websites, tailor media services to your personal tastes. They edit results and postings themed to what it thinks are your personal preferences, as we've already heard, based on what those machines know about you. Being machines, they think they know a lot. There's a dangerous consequence. You get trapped in a personal preference bubble, all you ever do is get exposed to information that you agree with. Sometimes it's okay not to have text up on the screen. What that means is you don't get exposed to or challenged by information that might broaden your worldview. I want to take us back to 1963. Who was around in 1963? Not me. Who can remember 1963? So I want to make the point that aside from the change in the form of technology, the reality we're talking about is hardly new. A few weeks prior to Christmas in 1963, the Second Vatican Council voted on and agreed a decree on social communications. Social communications. The decree outlines the rights and responsibilities of the media, the individual, and all of those involved, as well as the obligations for those of us engaged in structuring social communication initiatives. It proposes a moral framework for involvement in social communications. It's worth a read. So 50 years on, I'd like to look at a couple of examples from us in New Zealand about how we're getting on. Now, these examples at first look might not be called cutting-edge digital media examples, but there are lessons in them. So my examples will be New Zealand ones, and the trick is for you to try and do the contextualisation. You'll also learn a little bit about New Zealand, as scary as that might be, eh, Gavin? I'm privileged to serve on the board of the Catholic Inquiry Centre New Zealand. It's an agency of the New Zealand Catholic Bishops Conference. It's probably similar to one that you have here in Australia. I'm not sure how the operating model works here. One of the really public things the Catholic Inquiry Centre does is advertise its work through Google AdWords. So if you type in the word Catholic or 600 other associated words, you get an ad, first result, the Catholic Inquiry Centre. Free information about the Bible, God and Jesus, find out more online. We also run TV ads, and there's quite a lot of debate about whether they're good or not among the Catholic community. The end pitch for you is to Google Catholic and visit the centre's website or call 0800 Father. It's great that many people actually do it. When you visit the centre's site, the hope is that you order a set of booklets about the Catholic faith. They're free, they can be posted out or sent via PDF. We're a bit like the Catholic version of the Jehovah's Witnesses, except we don't knock on the door. Do you know the joke? What do you get if you cross a Jehovah's Witness with a Catholic? Someone who knocks on the door and doesn't know what to say. Anyway, we don't actually believe the joke, and we're trying to change it, so that's okay. A Maltese bishop whose name I can't say, he's a famous one, said in 2012, "We have a product which is extraordinary. The way we communicate things at times is a total disaster. We need to do better. We are not here to impose, we are here to propose." That is the Catholic Inquiry Centre's manifesto in one quote. For those who inquire about the faith, we propose the basics of our faith and pray that they may always be drawn to the overwhelmingly attractive figure of Jesus, and stirred by the challenge of the gospel's sublime ideals, from Ecclesia in Oceania. A beautiful document. And for us here in Oceania, I think it's absolute necessity to read that document. How you read it, what format you read it in, that's your choice. It's on that nice brown background website if you want to go and look at it. So what does the centre do of relevance to this conference? So we spend a couple of $100,000 a year advertising on digital media to engage people about God and the church. Prior to 2011, digital media paid a very small part of what we did. We advertised in print publications like The Woman's Day. Do you have that over here? Yeah. I think it's actually what we have is yours, but we changed the name. We advertised in print publications like newspaper and on television. In 2011, I hope you can see that, we started to change our spend. The green line is Google AdWords. And what we started to notice is, if we started spending more on Google AdWords, more people came and took our booklets. So we just gradually spent more and more on AdWords. But at one point, it just stopped. You know, no matter how much more we spent, the results were the same. So we'd reached our right mix. So what's the right mix, of course? and it just really depends on your own context and what you want people to do. The point here is that the centre has moved from traditional print media through broadcast media, through static web advertising. We've been through social media ads, and we now utilise what I call the wild west of the web, Google AdWords, words, display networks, and any kind of search engines that we can access at a reasonable price. We use TV still. I think that's important to say. TV is still important because it increases the presence and recognition. The AdWords provide access to our product, presence and product working together. So, who does it work? Or does it work? And who does it work for? It's worth reminding you all that New Zealand's total population in those three or four, however many counter islands that we've got, is about 4.5 million people. That's less than the whole country, less in our whole country than in Greater Sydney. About 11% identify as Catholic, with a red line there. That's about 500,000 people or so in the latest census. Of these, about 90,000 go to church on a Sunday, about 18%. For World Youth Day, when we all came across the ditch, we brought about 5,500 people. That's about 5% of our mass-going population had to get on a plane and come over here and experience your beautiful weather. It was good then. The Catholic Church now in New Zealand is the largest Christian denomination for the first time. It's not that we are growing, it's that the other Christian denominations are shrinking. We are remaining stable because of migration from cultures that are traditionally Catholic. I'm not sure if that's the case here. I've got a hunch it might be. What we do also note in New Zealand, the light blue line, is the huge rise of the denomination of no religion. I did a bit of a search round, and apart from countries that are traditionally atheist, we are now one of the most non-religious countries in the world. It's found at its highest level in those of European descent. I think that is quite a profound challenge for our country, and I'd say possibly also for here in Australia. Interestingly, with increased migration, those who identify as non-Christian, the red line, has also increased and now surpasses Catholic and Anglican denominations for the first time. So for the first time in New Zealand census, non-Christian religions or people of no faith outnumber Christians. Christians in New Zealand are a minority. And the decline is fast, 10% in 10 years. So what does all this mean when we think about those people that approach the Catholic Inquiry Centre? In New Zealand, they say that about half the population are female in the census. It's quite surprising, I suppose. Slightly more, 51 are female and 49 are male on a percentage basis. But the Catholic inquiry seekers getting our booklets are 60% female. The census tells us that the New Zealand population is getting older. The people coming to get our booklets are getting younger. That big blue line there is 35 to 44 years of age. About 50% of respondents are aged 25 to 44. That's our target market. So we're pretty pleased with that. 70% are under 45. So, is the digital media spend worth it? 90% of our seekers found our resources via the AdWords. The rest by calling 0800 Father or some contact card or something else. According to our survey, and it's always a bit biased when you do this, 98% were happy with the process. Not sure what the other 2% thought, but anyway. So the people that contact us, that want information about God and the Catholic faith, who are they? Well, our research is telling us that they are someone that goes to church regularly. So 50% of the people that approach us are Catholic. 20% are other Christians. 14% have no religion, 16% would be non-Christian faiths. Most of the Catholics had a regular place of worship and attend monthly at least. They are wanting to find out more. So is it successful? In essence, it is. People are being connected with. They are seeking answers, and we are providing information that they're not getting by going to church on a Sunday. It's a real challenge, and I would assume that it's a challenge here in Australia too. It seems to say that Catholics are not being formed by turning up to church. They then head onto the internet, they type in Catholic into Google, and they find us. Well, some of them find us, but what do the rest find that they don't come to us? We need to be in that space. Pope Francis was just saying that the other day. But it needs to be good. So, what is the lesson then for a digital media conference about the Catholic Inquiry Centre, from the Catholic Inquiry Centre? We present the church as it is. We don't try and make it too fluffy or beautiful or anything like that. We just tell everybody pretty much the doctrines of the church. After that, we propose a conversation. Everything we do is actually really simple. Simple is good. And Father Rick certainly shared that message with us just before. The logo designer for this event has on their website, I think they're called The Element. They quote this guy, Charles Mingus, on their site. Making the simple complicated is commonplace. Making the complicated simple, awesomely simple, that's creativity. The Catholic Centre sticks to its knitting. Is that a phrase you use over here? Do you still knit? So, its primary focus is to connect with people, so we can build a relationship that may result in that encounter with Jesus. So my next example then is the New Zealand Catholic Bishops Conference Front Door to the World, catholic.org.nz. Bit of a history with this site. Does everyone know about archive.org? If you don't, you should go along there and then type in the URL for your current website and you can see the history of the site over the years. You can click on a date and see what your site looked like on that date. Sometimes that's a good thing and sometimes not. Here's what catholic.org.nz looked like in 2001. Websites did used to look like that, you know. In 2002, there was a bit of an upgrade. In 2004, the bishops moved to this design. The wider presence of this design included RSS feeds from Catholic media. There's a lot of text there, a lot of text. In 2011, the site was redeveloped. It's now part informational content, part inspirational content, and part integrated to social media. New Zealand's first bishop was Bishop Pompallier. He was a Frenchman. The original idea of Catholic.org.nz was to create an online community called Pompallier's People to enable New Zealand Catholics to connect with each other and those interested in the Catholic faith. It can be explored on Facebook, Twitter, blog, and the website. In reality, this thing called Pompallier's People didn't work. It didn't take off. Apart from a few Catholics in Auckland, no one really knew who Pompallier was. So that was a bit of a problem. And plus, he'd been dead for about 100 years. And so no one had actually met him. Most energy and focus of the project to establish the site went on beautiful design and exact content. Agreed, exact content. Interaction was not the primary goal. I think there are some really good learnings for us here. The initial foundations of the site are quite locked in. Everything you do needs to be quite flexible. Just don't think about what you can do. Think about what your successor might be able to do and their successor, because they're the ones who have to keep it going. So if you find it a bit of a struggle to do it, the chances are, unless they're really young, they won't be able to do it either. The technology of this site is quite locked in, and it doesn't even work well on some browsers. It uses that evil thing called Flash. Small change is hard, and it slows down response times. Secondly, the interaction is all what I call outhouse. And in New Zealand, outhouse has a particular meaning. It's in Twitter and Facebook and all over the web. In a way, the project group were reflecting the owners of the site. That's the bishops of New Zealand. The challenge for the bishops, and I think this is the point that Gavin was trying to talk about, is partly about controlling their message. They know they can't take anything back. They can't pull it once it goes out there. every single element has to conform to what the six New Zealand bishops would accept. And although we're not as diverse in terms of the bishops of Australia, the New Zealand Catholic bishops of New Zealand are still a diverse bunch of people. Third, and related to conformity, people look to this site as a source of truth. From the Gospel of John, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. Everyone who belongs to the truth listens to my voice." And Pilate scoffed and said, "What is truth? What is truth?" 2,000 years later, that question still rings in our ears. What is truth? If Pilate had known that his words would be heard so loudly throughout the rest of human history, what would he have said? What would you have said? Digital media is part megaphone, amplifying everything we say, part tape recorder, remember those? Recording everything we say. At its best, digital media is conversation, dialogue. So, why in the church do we not do conversation better? Why are we not open to true dialogue? Why couldn't Pilate truly engage with Jesus? And the answer is fear. We're afraid. Fear. John Paul II echoed Christ at the Transfiguration. In his first words, he said, "Do not be afraid," or as Greg's book is called, "Be not afraid." He even said in his last pastoral letter, "Do not be afraid of new technologies." Time and time again, the history of humanity shows us that human beings act or don't act out of fear. Fear of true dialogue. I just want to read this quote, a recent quote from Father Tom Rosica. The link to it is actually on the Facebook page of this conference. One part of that, I'm not going to read the whole thing, don't worry. Father Tom Rosica, Salt and Light Media. "I recently did a little study of Pope Francis' homilies and texts to find all of the places where Francis talks about the devil. And one of the interesting things he says is that diabolical works are about monologue. The works of the Spirit are about dialogue. Monologue is all about people speaking to themselves about themselves and speaking about others, not speaking with others. Works of the Spirit are those based on solid dialogue." I think that is an exceptionally profound quote. And it is worth going to the Digital Media Conference of Australia's Facebook page and following through and clicking on that link. I haven't met Tom Rosica, but I imagine he's got some pretty profound things to say. So, the lessons or questions that arise from my examples and this particular challenge I'm placing before you: who are we talking with? Who are you communicating with? Who are you in dialogue with? Who are you listening to? Because dialogue presupposes that you listen. Social media, by definition, is about dialogue. To overcome fear, we need to truly listen. The Lord was not in the wind. The Lord was not in the earthquake. The Lord was not in the fire. After the fire, a sound of sheer silence. When Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak. He went out, stood at the entrance of the cave, then a voice came to him. The noise of the digital world is immense. It's even been called total noise. The paradox is, the Lord is found in sheer silence. Some translations say the gentle breeze. Total silence. To find the Lord in the total noise is hard. Try this exercise with your best mate. Plug some headphones into their ears and have your little iPod there, or if you're a bit older and like me, put it on a CD player and press play. Turn up your loudest, best piece of music as loud as you can. And then just when it reaches the climax of the piece of music, press stop. Tell them to keep their eyes closed the whole time. And when you press stop, they'll get fidgety and they'll find it very difficult to be in that silence. Some church leaders are rightly hesitant to use some forms of communication. It's something they don't know. It's new to them. And they feel a bit uncomfortable with that. They're concerned about taking the gospel into an environment that might be a bit messy. It might be a bit loud. Like the Luddites of the 1800s, they're focused on its impact on people. However, the digital age offers us an opportunity if we can truly listen, and we need to truly listen. It can provide an ear for the church to listen to what the people of this age are anxious and thinking about. Our role, if we choose it, is to help make sense of the noise, to stand out of the cave, listen, and enter the conversation. It's a bit like the example of Father Rick. You just know what Apple is offering. They've made sense of the noise. I work for the Catholic Archdiocese of Wellington. That's us, the bit on the land, not the bits in the sky. I'd like to share some of the thinking that we're doing towards our own adventure into the digital age. What I call quill sharpening. We're getting ready to compose rather than composing yet. It seems a bit counterintuitive to do that in the digital age. We believe we only have a few opportunities to get this right. In the meantime, we have holding patterns in place and people, when they connect, can get a whole lot of content. A lot of people think that we need to act really quickly. They look at these pictures and they just illustrate the craziness of seeing everyone wired up, not interacting. They think the church needs to jump in there, get in there quickly, and somehow by adding to it, change it. I'm not sure that the logic necessarily follows as simply as that. We need to get in there, we need to add to it, but not quickly. We just need to challenge sometimes the structure of this thing. No doubt, the accessibility of technology has profoundly changed the nature of our relationships, sometimes in unhealthy ways, sure, but it's not new. Neither are the responses. It's tempting, I think, to view digital media, especially social networking, as another platform just to throw out a whole lot of information. The pitch we all receive is it's easy, it's cheap, and it's everywhere. It's not easy, it's not that cheap, and it's not everywhere. The primary challenge today, of all days, is to invite people into relationship with Jesus Christ and each other. Relationships are based on conversations, not monologue, real dialogue. So in the Archdiocese, we are planning to support a conversation or a series of conversations, aiming to have people like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That's not our primary goal. People have very interesting motivations for likes and follows. A study found that lots of organisations want their members or consumers to follow them on social media because they want those people to be part of their community. We want that, right? The research says that very few people actually agree with that. The people that use the technologies don't actually think like that. The top reason, says the research, why people like or follow an organisation is to get a discount. To get 50% off a new pair of shoes. That doesn't really work for us. That's not ideal. Our ideal is community building, but a discount isn't part of that. The research went on to outline that organisations were pushing out too much information. They were giving users too many choices. They were confusing them. Too much choice can leave you no choice at all. We used to say that in youth ministry. To make a choice involves trust. To help people make choices means they need to trust you. Trust is developed by presenting what we know and what we know to be true, what we have experienced. We can do that. We can be witnesses. But we have some challenges right at the moment to rebuild trust. It's on the news almost every night. Even in New Zealand, we are hearing about the rebuilding of trust that you and Australia need to do. We need to do it too. As I said, in the Archdiocese of Wellington, we have a few things in place, and we're trying a few new things, slowly and deliberately, to see what works and what doesn't. I read a recent thing from the Vatican social media advisor, I think that's who it was anyway, and he said you need to be promiscuous. Well, that got my attention. He said you need to try out a lot of them, but don't marry them. Talk about a confusing message. That's all over the web. It's all over the web. Anyway, but what he was saying was try a lot of these things out, see what works, and I suppose he means marry the one that you think's right. I'll give you a couple of examples of the things that we've tried. In late 2013, the Archdiocese of Wellington did a diocesan pilgrimage. The Archbishop and a few pilgrims, it was a bit like the Lord of the Rings, we set off on an adventure and journeyed around the diocese. We did it to close the year of faith. We went around every what we call pastoral area in the diocese. It was quite good. We didn't promote it widely on social media, but what we thought we'd do is post from each location, sometimes during the event. So I posted, I shouldn't say I was bored, but anyway, I posted during this service there at the southern point of our diocese. We posted things like that, a photo, an image, and a little bit of text. We tried to show people and pilgrims in place. People love seeing themselves and their kids participating in the event. But what gained the most hits, the most comments, one photo by some measure, about 30 times more than anything else? That's our Archbishop changing his tire. It's our version of Greg's How to Make a California Roll Sushi. So, earlier this year, we hosted 80 or so bishops from Oceania. Some of your bishops might be up there. The Federation of Catholic Bishops' Conferences of Oceania met in Wellington, New Zealand. We posted a few things during their time in Wellington, but generally, we tried to leave the bishops to be in conference, in committee. They enjoyed their time and didn't feel like it was a political exercise. More of a retreat and a meeting. Sometimes public people need that space too. Again, it's putting the person ahead of the other. The other motivations, however positive they might be, may only have a short-term effect. Our bishops needed a retreat. Anyway, after a mass hosted in one of our secondary colleges, the whole school gathered outside to thank the bishops for coming. They thanked them for it goes on. We can watch it later. Many of the bishops mentioned it as an absolute highlight of the event. On the 5-minute trip back to the venue on the bus with the bishops, because I'd taken the video on my cell phone, I thought, gee, people will like this. So I was sitting next to a bishop and I asked his permission. I asked one bishop, you've got them all right. And I thought people might like it. So what I did was, when we got back to the venue, I'd uploaded it to our Archdiocese Facebook page. And I thought, you know what, we don't really have that many followers and it won't really get anywhere, so I paid Facebook $47 to promote it for me. It was a big price to pay. Within about 3 hours, it had 12,000 views, which for us is a big deal. Like, 12,000 is almost everyone who goes to church in New Zealand, right? although some Australians looked at it too. For us, that was a bigger audience than normal. After that 3 hours, it's hardly been viewed since. It used to be that you had 15 minutes of fame. In the digital age, I'm not so sure. So what I'd like to do to finish is present a framework for the church. Now, when I say I'd like to present it, I'm really just ripping off someone else's ideas, right? The definition of originality is taking someone else's ideas and just doing it a little bit better. In this case, I don't think I can do it better than this person. So, the answer to the question, who are the digital media leaders? They are the people that ask the question, why? Why are we doing what we're doing? Why are we about to do what we're about to do? And they know the answer. It's a bit like what Greg was saying this morning. he can say why he loves Jesus in a Twitter line. Got to know the answer why. The answer, by the way, isn't because everyone else is doing it. Well, it's not doing it just because we can. John Paul II, he's the guy that was original with this, in his compendium of the social doctrine of the church, gives us the framework. The essential question is whether the information system, that's what we're talking about today, is contributing to the betterment of the human person. Does it make people more spiritually mature? Not more spiritual, more spiritually mature. More aware of their dignity and more responsive to others. After answering the why, that then underpins the other questions. What is it exactly that we will say? What is the content of communication? Then, how will we communicate this content? What tools will we use? What channels will we use? And then lastly, he asks us a really tough thing. Who are you going to leave out? Because if you choose one or even 20 channels, you're still leaving out most of the world. And John Paul II challenges that in this particular document. So, the primary question is why? Again, to continue from John Paul, in all three areas, the message, the process, and the structural issues, one fundamental moral principle applies. The human person is the end and measure of the use of media. To finish, I want to provide you with my tips. I think I already said that was my last thing, but to finish properly, my tips for you who work in the age, in the digital age. First of all, truly listen. Watch, read, or engage with something every day that you know you're going to disagree with. How many people read a blog or a site that they know they're not going to like? That's what you need to do every single day. Remember, what you are currently not engaged with, the rest of the world is. What you engage with is only a small proportion of the information available. You don't have to agree with it, but you need to understand it. You need to be open, and you need to truly listen. Second, simply create. Simplicity is the genius of creation. Einstein said, everything should be as simple as it can be, but not simpler. It's actually a very profound quote and not very simple. This is my stick to your knitting principle. Create something meaningful, spend time getting it right, and making it simple for others. If it's worth it, it's worth it. There is not only one way to engage. Use channels wisely. Think about what channels you use. Do one thing really well, or two things really well, or even three things really well. Don't do lots of things badly. Be device neutral, and I don't mean device friendly. Be kind to those with lots of screens, big screens, small screens, and no screens. Quite a lot of people don't engage like you do. 90% of information is transmitted visually. Visual information is not contentless. Visual information holds most of the content that we have in our brains. One of the problems I note with social media is there's often not a lot of really good quality content that could form people. We are not simply about changing the perception of the church, we're about forming people into real lasting change in their lives. Father Tom Rosica says, take the time to create and prepare solid, comprehensible, creative content that engages conversation. Have a call to action. We do not ask others what we are not doing ourselves. Do not ask others to do what we are not doing ourselves. Give people a reason to trust and respond. End everything you do with a question. Jesus was great at this. Will you come with me? Who do you say I am? Have I not chosen you? Do you love me? remember that our communication is not just a communication of content, but it's a medium of formation. We are about forming people. Therefore, the digital media leader, you must be formed. Being authentic is about being formed and being a disciple in order to form others into discipleship. That's what all this is about. Authenticity is everything. If you have to choose between being right and being kind, choose both. Choose both. From wisdom, those who are just must be kind, giving your children good ground for hope. Good ground to sow those seeds. Be right and be kind. People will forget what you said. People will forget what you did. But people will never forget how you made them feel. If you are authentic, you can take a risk. Last month, Pope Francis said, "Maybe many young people waste too many hours on futile things, the products of technological progress, which should simplify and improve the quality of life. Actually, they distract attention away from what is really important." I think the church has a leadership role here then. We need to ensure that the use of digital media is focused on what is really important. Pope Francis himself shared those words via social media, or at least the people that support him did. So Pope Francis is challenging us to ensure that every moment, every encounter, is one of evangelization. As I said at the start, the church has to simply be what it is. It's a missionary encounter between a church with 2,000 years of history, good and bad, and a media user with the experience of now on the other. The religious tradition we are part of has always been at the forefront of communication. From the Ten Commandments, through to the fish symbol drawn on the ground, through to iconography, to Michelangelo, the printed word, the broadcast sessions of Vatican II, through to any interview with the Pope. Revealing the revealed truth through media, spoken, played, sung, printed, painted, sculpted, built, uploaded and streamed, it's actually the great effort of the church, since ever. So to you, the questions remain. How do we respond and act when we communicate, when we reveal the gospel? It must be done from a position that's based within our Catholic tradition, that will endure long after our statues, our cathedrals, our web pages and Twitter feeds have disappeared. We are a church in the digital age. Make sense of the total noise. Make a move. Stand out of the cave. Listen and enter into the conversation.
That was David Mullen on Leaders and Luddites, bringing the church into the digital age. For more information about CDMC, visit cdmcaustralia.com. And for more talks, interviews and shows, visit cradio.org.au.